This is Audible.
Bolinda presents this unabridged recording of Critical Thinking, A Beginner's Guide, written by Sharon M. Kay and read by Andrea Powell. Preface. I will never forget my first logic class. I am sitting in a large lecture hall at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. Outside the long, stately windows, it is sunny and warm. I am surrounded by 100 distracted students in jeans and T-shirts. Professor Ellery Ells is up on the stage telling us that logic is the law of thought. I am riveted, but only because I am offended. How can this man have the nerve to stand up there and tell me there are limits on what can be true? Fancying myself a poet and an artist, I resist his every word. Surely creativity is more important than clarity. Imagination is the secret to happiness, and it needs no rules. My notebook from that course is filled with rebellious floral doodles and not a few unkind sketches of Professor Ells. But thank God for university requirements. By the time I finished the course, I understood. Beauty is meaningless without structure, and logic is the most powerful structure ever conceived. So now I wake to find that I've been teaching the basic logic skills known as critical thinking for over 10 years. I would like to thank my students over the years for trying to fight me the way I tried to fight Professor Ells. I would also like to thank John Carroll University for reducing my course load every semester so that I have time to write. Terry Bradley and Elizabeth Funk obtained permissions for all of the passages quoted in this book. I am grateful for their timely and effective work. Finally, I am grateful to my editor at One World, Mike Harpley, for sound guidance throughout the process. This book is dedicated to Triss and the rest of the Gamesters. You all play a role in what follows. Introduction. Insight, untested and unsupported, is an insufficient guarantee of truth. Bertrand Russell. Do you have opinions? Of course you do. Having opinions is how we define ourselves. It's how we forge alliances. Oh, I like that TV show too. And it's how we distinguish ourselves from others. That TV show is for idiots. Young children may differ from their parents in terms of aversions. I hate green beans and attractions. I love swimming. But it takes them a while to develop opinions that contradict their parents. This war is wrong. Having independent opinions is the first sign of growing up. Breaking out of the parental mold is terrifying at first. But it's also exhilarating. Teenagers often find it so exhilarating that they begin to express contrary views at every available opportunity, and even to create conflict out of nothing when things get dull. It's a free country. I can think what I want. Annoying as this can be, we have to admit that having independent opinions is actually an accomplishment. Considering how much our family, our friends, the media, the government, and religious institutions try to influence us, it's amazing that anyone ever has an original thought at all. And the fact that we have the right to think and say what we believe really is something to relish. It's one of the greatest triumphs of modern civilization. Our ancestors in the Middle Ages simply were not permitted to disagree with authority. Brave protesters throughout history slowly changed this for us. Tragically, there are still countries around the world today without the right to free speech. Being able to express oneself is such a great thing that sometimes people make the mistake of thinking it is the final stage of intellectual maturity, that once you've developed a unique and interesting point of view, you're ready to face the world and all its challenges. This is unfortunate. In fact, having opinions is just the beginning. Because we live in an age of freedom, you don't have to defend your opinions. But don't you want to? If your opinions are more than just childish aversions and attractions, then you should be willing to take a stand for them. Wherever you are, your point of view will give you opinions about the issues you face. But having opinions is not enough to be successful in what you do. You need to be able to transform your opinion into a position. The difference between an opinion and a position is that a position is supported by argument. Anyone can make an argument, but let's face it, some arguments are better than others. In order to make a good argument, you need to use logic. Logic is the bare bones of all human thought. Human beings are born with a natural ability to reason logically, but we are also born with a propensity to make logical errors. By uncovering and examining the logic underlying ordinary reasoning, you can learn to support your opinions effectively. Intelligent people misuse logic every day. Sometimes they do so on purpose in order to manipulate you. This happens a lot in advertising. And maybe it doesn't matter much if you are tricked into buying Coke instead of Pepsi. But manipulative logic can also be used in more important contexts, such as in a court of law. Consider the following summation speech. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, we have heard testimony over the past several days regarding the brutal murder of Cassandra Thomas, the owner of a corner grocery store in Gamerton. Ms. Thomas was shot dead in her store on the afternoon of 10th of July. The defendant, Mr. Vincent Cockley, insists he had no motive for this crime. Yet he is in debt, and his ex-girlfriend attests to his psychological instability. Furthermore, although he has worked at the same company for 5 years, his co-workers say they feel they don't really know him. Mr. Cockley's lawyer asks us to believe that Mr. Cockley is just a shy little fellow who couldn't hurt a fly. But the bottom line is this. Either Mr. Cockley is an upstanding citizen, or he is a violent criminal, and a man who hasn't even paid his taxes for the past 2 years cannot be considered an upstanding citizen, shy or otherwise. Everyone knows lying is wrong. Yet Mr. Cockley admitted he lied to the police when they first questioned him concerning his whereabouts on the night of July 10th. Upon further questioning, the police learned that Mr. Cockley was in the process of planning a trip to Mexico, which very nearly enabled him to escape arrest. Mr. Cockley testified that the trip was for a charity that helps needy people build homes. The charity organizer, however, testified that the construction crew is composed primarily of ex-cons. This confirms the well-known fact that criminals habitually associate with other criminals. Mr. Cockley claims that on the night of July 10th, he arrived at Ms. Thomas's store just as the real killer was fleeing, and that he chased the killer across town before losing him. I must remind you, however, that Mr. Cockley has already lied once. How can we be expected to believe anything else he tells us? Finally, the crime scene investigators have established that Ms. Thomas's murderer wore the gloves displayed in Exhibit A. If the gloves did not fit Mr. Cockley, then he would be proven innocent. But the gloves do fit him, as you witnessed with your own eyes. Therefore, Mr. Cockley is guilty, and therefore he should receive the maximum penalty. You can probably tell that this speech is flawed, but can you find all 10 errors? Can you name them and explain why they are wrong? There is an answer key at the end of this book. This speech is fictional. You're not likely ever to be subjected to such a terrible line of reasoning in real life, unless you're in the habit of reading advertisements for diet pills. Respectable speakers and writers try to be logical, and they have editors and proofreaders who check to be sure they are. The frightening truth is this. Actual logical errors are more likely to occur in the unexamined corners of your own mind than in a public speech or in print. For example, suppose you were not on the jury for the above case, but you were instead reading about it in a newspaper, which said the following. There has been widespread speculation that the gloves displayed in Exhibit A would never fit Mr. Cockley. During proceedings today, however, Mr. Cockley agreed to try on the gloves, and they did fit. After reading this paragraph, the following thought might float nonchalantly through your mind. Well, if the gloves didn't fit, he'd be innocent. But they did fit, so he must be guilty. This is bad logic. The newspaper would never print it, and only the seediest lawyer would ever say it out loud. As a private thought, however, it will float through the minds of many people who read the newspaper article. While speeches and articles are subjected to careful proofreading, our thoughts often go unchecked. Such thoughts are a menace. They lead to bad attitudes and bad decisions. They impede our ability to think clearly. It is possible, however, to develop the mental habit of checking your own logic as well as the logic of others. This is called critical thinking. People sometimes suppose the term critical thinker applies to anyone who likes to criticize others. In particular, non-conformist groups and radical political organizations that criticize the government or other aspects of mainstream society often style themselves as critical thinkers. They may or may not be, depending on how they go about their criticism. True critical thinking is about using good logic. By learning the basic principles of good logic, you will be less likely to be fooled by bad logic, and you will be more readily able to develop intelligent positions on important issues. This book is designed to give you all the critical thinking skills you need. Chapter 1. What is an argument? A noble heart will always capitulate to reason. Johann Friedrich von Schiller. The first step toward becoming a critical thinker is to learn how to identify arguments. In everyday conversation, the term argument is most often used for an angry exchange of words. People therefore typically think of an argument as an unpleasant situation to be avoided. In academic and professional circles, however, the term argument has a technical meaning. An argument is a discussion in which reasons are advanced in favor of a proposal. Argument is the best way to support your opinions. It need not be angry or unpleasant at all. Standard form. In order to identify and study arguments, we rewrite them in standard form. Standard form is a schema for identifying the steps of an argument. This is the general format. 1. The first reason is. 2. The second reason is. 3. Therefore, the proposal is. Steps 1 and 2 are called the premises, while the final step is called the conclusion. An argument can contain any number of premises leading to a single conclusion. It can also contain a series of sub-conclusions. A sub-conclusion is a conclusion that functions as a premise for a further conclusion. For example, 1. Hybrids are the most efficient cars. 2. The most efficient cars are cheapest to drive. 3. So hybrids are the cheapest to drive. 4. I should buy whatever car is cheapest to drive. 5. Therefore, I should buy a hybrid. Step 3 of this standard form is a subconclusion. It is conventional to signal subconclusions by the word so, instead of the word therefore, in order to tell the reader more is coming. Although arguments are everywhere, they are often difficult to recognize. This is because authors almost never present their arguments in standard form. Instead, they typically couch them within long expositions, leaving it to the reader to figure out exactly what the premises and conclusions are. The following is a rare case in which author William Lane Craig not only tells you he is about to discuss an argument, but also lays out its steps for you in standard form. Professor Mackey and the Kalam Cosmological Argument. In this piece, I should like to focus on Mackey's analysis of one particular argument, the Kalam Cosmological Argument. For his discussion at this point seems to me to be superficial, and I think it can be shown that he has failed to provide any compelling or even intuitively appealing objection against the argument. The Kalam argument may be schematized. 1. Whatever begins to exist has a cause of its existence. 2. The universe began to exist. 3. Therefore, the universe has a cause of its existence.